Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
Yes, we are. So I have a question. Are you like over jet lag yet? I mean, it's been like a week and a half.
I don't think I'll ever be over jet lag.
I think more importantly, will you ever be over going to the Taylor Swift concert at Wembley?
No. I mean, no, in the best of ways. I will never be over it. It is the ultimate good stuff.
Yeah, I would think so.
To be in the presence of 92,000 other people.
Who are happy and joyful. Saying joyful. That's such a great word.
Yes, a joyful, happy environment. Everyone is singing. Everyone's dancing. All ages. Fathers, daughters, mothers, daughters, couples, best friends, giant groups of friends. It's pretty cool.
And you got to see the show that had Ed Sheeran.
I did.
How did that, like, explain that?
How did that make me feel?
Yeah, that made me good, I suppose.
Well, I will say, Ed Sheeran is an incredibly popular artist everywhere, as we all know. But in England, I think he is incredibly beloved to such a degree that the place exploded, which is hard to imagine when you already have Taylor Swift there.
Right. But, and 92,000 people screaming already.
Yes, and he came out of the floor magically.
Of course.
During one of her secret songs, and they did sort of a mashup of two of her songs and one of his songs, and then she talked about how he's like a brother to her, and they've known each other a long time. They went on tour together when they were both really just starting out. And then she sort of said, and he's really tired. So he just came off tour himself and he's really tired. So he went back down
into the just
floor,
like that.
And that was it.
But you said they did one of their songs together that they had recorded together, right?
Yes, they did. Everything Has Changed, which was pretty cool. So she started it and then was like, wait a minute. Something's not right. And then he just magically appeared. So the whole thing is once in a lifetime experience. Well, maybe, let's hope.
Hopefully
more than
not.
Once in a lifetime.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But her tour is wrapping up later this year in the United States and Canada. So it was pretty cool. I think Wembley clearly is a very important place to her. It was her first show back after she had to cancel some shows in Vienna. And I think she was just taking it all in and was pretty emotional.
Yeah, I imagine.
And got very long standing ovations, just everybody pulling for her.
Yeah,
and
that's incredible.
Wanting her to feel good.
And Michelle and I both got bracelets today. So thank you for bringing them in. You, I think, were hoarding them, frankly, last week. So we didn't get them. But now...
No, the culture of bracelets is part of the happiness, too.
I know.
Like, people just...
How cool is that?
Yeah. It's very cool. What a great excuse to just go and talk to people and
share
stories.
We love about wine and how we love this show. It's about connecting and community. And here's Taylor Swift has created a community where people feel comfortable talking to each other. They're giving each other bracelets. They're celebrating together. They're joyful together. That's the good stuff.
Well, and she has, not just a few songs that mention wine or champagne in particular.
Yep.
So she's trying to help us out.
Exactly. Thank you, Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
We appreciate the support.
Yeah. So,
and if you want to call into the show, feel free.
Yeah. If you need wine recommendations, we're happy to help.
Or we'll send you wine.
We
don't even have to recommend. We can just box them up and get it to you, because really you should be drinking Sonoma County wine.
I think she would like Sonoma County wine very much.
For sure. We're gonna have to get someone on that. I don't know who, but maybe someone out there, if you're listening. We'd love to work with you on getting Taylor Swift some Sonoma County wine.
We will find a way.
I know. I love it. But it's been a busy week beyond Swifty. So, I mean, I can attest, I was teasing you about jet lag, but you've been super involved. We had our Ag Center, our think tank, this past week, actually wrapped up Thursday night, Friday morning. So we love that. And we're going to actually have Professor George Day from the Wharton School on one of our next shows. We're working on scheduling with him, so that will be fun. And we had our partners John Deere back in town this past week. So they've been here a lot.
I think they like it here.
I really do. I think they're really learning to appreciate vineyard and viticulture ag as opposed to corn and soybeans of the Midwest. So, I mean, go figure.
Yeah, I think there might be something going on there.
I mean, beautiful vineyards, great food and wine. I mean, what's not to love? So,
and you are an amazing host.
Right? Thank you. I do love that. So they were here filming, actually, Monday and Tuesday this past week, just showcasing our six pilot farmers, their ranches, their operations, harvest, since harvest is in full swing, essentially, now. So that was, it's been a really good week.
Okay,
and,
well.
And I've got my new bracelets, so.
I know. Enjoy them. May they bring you much joy.
They already are.
Okay, we'll be back soon. Welcome back to The Good Stuff. Our guest today is Eric Bradley. He is the winemaker for quite a few brands, Repris Wines, Pangloss Cellars, Texture Wines. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you, Virginie. Great to be here.
Why, thanks.
All wines I like.
I know.
Just for the record.
I know. All great wines.
I know. I was going to say, right? I mean, how do you, you can't go wrong.
So this must be with that much wine to in, that you're responsible for, this must be quite a busy time of year.
It feels like, you know, the calm before the storm. I think most of my kind of busyness will happen later in September and through October. Things certainly accelerated with all that heat that we had in July.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're all interesting vintages at this point, but there's a pulse to them.
Right. Well, let's get into that interesting vintages. I was sort of struck by the fact that you studied biochem in Chicago, and then you studied philosophy and modern European intellectual history, which brought you to California, I suspect, you're originally from California.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about how you go from biochem, modern European intellectual history, to becoming a winemaker.
It was...
Yeah, please explain that path.
Yeah,
we're curious. Very clear.
We're curious.
Uniquely perfect preparation for kind of what I ended up doing, but no plan whatsoever. It was really an adventure. You know, math and science just kind of came fairly easy to me as a kid, so I always got funneled in that direction by school. So when I started off at University of Chicago, it was kind of a natural place for me to start. I quickly figured out I didn't want to go to med school.
Right.
Nor necessarily be kind of chained to a lab for the rest of my life. And when you're a biochem major at a school like Chicago, you're generally taking classes with a bunch of people who are on the pre-med track.
Right.
Who aren't that fun to be around with or be around in general unless you're one of them. So
that's okay. I like my doctors not to be that much fun.
That's fine with me too.
I prefer to have them serious.
Agreed.
So that's perfect.
Agreed. So I kind of found myself soul searching about what to do, and it was just a natural place to end up was philosophy for me. Huh. You know, just trying to kind of answer some of the big questions that are out there. There are a lot of ties between certainly math, science, and philosophy, and you know, guys like Newton, Descartes,
sure,
kind of crossed over way back when. And I certainly wasn't thinking on their level, but I enjoyed kind of studying what they were thinking back in the day. And then when it came
but did you answer any of the big questions?
Well, I think the answer is that a lot of them are just unanswerable.
Sure. There you go. Okay.
And there's freedom in that.
There is freedom in that.
So my parents, I grew up in Palo Alto. Mm-hmm. So I'd gone to Chicago, quickly figured out how cold. Things can be back there.
Having Carissa, lived there, I will cold. Very much validate that. Yes.
Windy.
Yeah.
Windy, cold. Yeah. Very cold.
And growing up on the West Coast and certainly on the peninsula that was so mild.
Yeah.
You know, it was a shock.
You're what we called soft when you grow up in the Midwest. All you West Coasters were like...
You mean Californian?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. West Coasters, you're soft. Like, you haven't had to have the hardiness just really frozen into your bones in the middle of a really extreme Midwest winter. true.
No, and I leaned into that while I was there.
Yeah.
You know, I was in full parkas in October when
everyone else is like wearing shorts and this is summer.
People in California don't realize you can actually go to Eddie Bauer and buy a coat for like negative temperatures. Like, and it says, like,
I don't ever want to have
this
to
coat
do that.
Will protect you for up to negative 20. If you're going to go negative 20 to like negative 50, you know, windshield, like you probably should go for the super puffy with just like little slits for your eyes, because you should cover head to toe, essentially a body puffer.
It's like well, crazy. Fortunately, my mother had me well equipped.
Moms are good at that.
Yeah, they sent you off with all the right tools. Yes.
So anyway, it was a shock to the system, and I pivoted back to the West Coast to UC Irvine.
Right.
And lived a block and a half off the beach in Newport.
Nice.
And so it was...
That was a good recovery.
Yeah. It felt like it at the time, certainly. And that was a great place to kind of study philosophy. And history was just an easy add-on because it was always an interest of mine.
Yeah.
So that's really where that lied. And there was a lot of crossover with the European intellectual history and philosophy.
I'm curious about your time in Chicago beyond being freezing cold most of the time. It's such a great food town. Mm. Did you sort of, I mean, you might have been sort of a poor, struggling student, but like, were you able to kind of get into the food scene there, or were you always like interested in food and wine? Or
I mean, I always loved food, but I didn't have the budget to really, go for it.
He was a student.
I know, but Chicago is more manageable than other cities.
Well, it was actually kind of an amazing, coming from Palo Alto, the food scene back then down on the peninsula was fairly vanilla. Mm. And going to Chicago, it was very eclectic.
Yes.
And the street food scene that was in my budget was fun to chase. Now, the south side of Chicago back in those days, and still today, I'm sure to some degree, was a rough place to be back in the late 80s. So you had to venture off and be pretty measured about it. But it was fun to just explore and kind of do things that you could never do on the West Coast.
I still miss the pizza. Mm, I'll just say it.
I bet.
I do.
Yeah, we had Medici's that was kind of on campus, that their garbage pizza I still kind of dream about a little bit.
I mean, what could go wrong with garbage pizza?
It's actually called garbage pizza. That's amazing.
It's funny. I visited a few years ago when I was there doing a market visit, and I decided to tour campus. Yep. And that part of town's gotten a lot more gentrified than it was when I was there. We were really engulfed by kind of misery when I was there. And now everything's, an ode to Obama.
Yeah.
Kind of cracked me up. So the old pizza place, it's like, all the waiters and waitresses and servers and whatever were wearing T-shirts that says, "This is Obama's favorite place."
That's
kind of funny.
Although now it'll probably all switch to being homages to the bear, right? I mean, it'll go from Obama to the bear.
Yeah.
Right? It'll be some other sort of cultural thing.
Yeah, Obama's roots are fairly deep.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
So you're asking yourself these big questions after the garbage pizza. You go on to ask all the big unanswerable questions. And then you become a high school teacher and tennis coach.
Right. So I had played a lot of tennis as a kid.
Yep.
And I played tennis at University of Chicago, and which was Division III. It's not super competitive compared to what I grew up doing on the West Coast. That's really a hotbed for tennis. So when I came back, it was kind of a natural thing to start teaching when I didn't want to compete anymore. Mm-hmm. And that dovetailed into doing some academic tutoring. I was kind of teaching and coaching at some fairly elite private schools down on the peninsula in Los Altos Hills and Atherton.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting insofar as the kids who were there were, really high achievers, both on the court as well as in the classroom. So I had fun with it, just more or less being a mentor to these guys. So it was a fun period. I knew I didn't want to do it indefinitely.
Yeah.
Both my parents, who had been born and raised in Palo Alto as well, they decided to retire up in Sonoma Valley.
Okay.
Bought a piece of property.
Smart parents.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, very. So they bought a piece of property that had a small, like 8.5 acre vineyard on it, in the town of Kenwood. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of got me interested in wine. My father had collected a little bit of wine when I was younger. Mm-hmm. So we had kind of a modest cellar, but, you know, he wasn't all that focused on it. He was running his business and very focused on that. But when he sold it and they moved up north, it was like a crash course. And, okay, we're moving into wine country. We got to understand what's around us. And then, of course, there's this vineyard here.
What do we do with that?
Right. That had been planted back in the early 70s. Yeah. And, you know, they had really no interest in starting a winery or being expert farmers.
8.5 acre garden.
Right.
It's called a vineyard.
It's pretty to look
at. Yeah.
That, you know, needs a specific set of skills to kind of unlock its potential. So I was asked, I'm an only child, so I was asked to kind of help out. So I would come up on the weekends from the peninsula and, you know, we'd all just kind of get out in the vineyard and try and figure out what was going on. Took classes from Rich Thomas at Santa Rosa JC. Got the basics on viticulture.
You're a Rich Thomas alumni.
I am. I am. Rich was awesome.
Yes.
Yep. And then went to Davis and kind of took everything they would let me take through their extension program. And I was focused really on the farming side. Mm-hmm. And then quickly figured out that the only way I was going to understand the wine side, which at the time I was thinking would just be good context for the farming, was to go work for somebody else that, you know, had already figured out a lot. So I applied to every place I could think of in Sonoma Valley just to be close to Kenwood. And, you know, I uprooted. So I obviously moved up. This was the end of 1998 when I did this. And I was lucky enough to stumble into a harvest internship at Arrowwood.
Yeah.
Which at the time...
Not too bad.
No, it was really kind of the Princess Project in Sonoma Valley.
Yeah.
And one of the, you know, one of the it projects of Sonoma County and all of wine country. And Richard and Elise still owned the winery themselves at that point. This was the 2000 harvest. But right after harvest, they had sold to Mondavi. Yeah. So instead of it being a 6 to 8 week spot, which was perfect, and I got along great with Richard and Mike Bertou, who was making the wines back then. With Richard's guidance, of course. And they asked me to stick on. So that kind of evolved into full assistant winemaking, and I did 3 harvests there and really got to touch everything. And we sourced fruit from all over Sonoma County, from some of the best vineyards you can think of, and all the different AVAs. The one thing we didn't do was Pinot. We didn't do Zinfandel either, but you know, Pinot was a big miss. And that was, I'd stumbled into kind of a fascination with Pinot while I was, you know, taking my crash course of, you know, how to fit in.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, I decided I should be making some of this on the side, just because it's interesting to me and I love drinking it.
Yeah.
And it's not that far away from some, you know, premier growing regions for Pinot and Chard, for that matter. So I started doing that on the side. There happened to be a small little winemaking facility on the property my parents had bought. It's a 22-acre property. Previous owners had had a small 500-case bonded winery there. So we kept the use permit alive. And I got my own license. I didn't have any idea what I was going to do with it because I didn't know how to make wine at that point. I had had a recipe effectively from Martin Vanderkamp.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Who's ended up being kind of an
Sonoma
influence.
Mountain Road legend.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, my
maybe
path.
Just a legend.
Yeah. My path has crossed Martin's in kind of really unexpected ways over the years. So he had planted the vineyard on my parents' property back in 1972.
Jeez.
For sparkling wine production for Vanderkamp Cellars, which at the time is where Landmark is now.
Wow.
So is that
12.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So what was planted?
On it was Pinot and Chard.
On the 8.5 acres.
Yeah.
In Kenwood. Okay. Interesting.
In Kenwood. And yeah. You're learning how to make Cabernet and
which
over
is like, yeah. you know, in a past era, right? Where Kenwood would have been cool enough for that to work. And for sparkling you know, it was probably perfectly suited.
Well, and also in the 70s, everyone was figuring out. I mean, we weren't necessarily just planting Pinot and Chardonnay on the west side of Sonoma County or Cabernet up north. It was a hodgepodge of everyone learning what worked.
And the seasons were different.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, I mean, it would start raining generally earlier in the fall.
Yes.
Not all the time, but generally. And Kenwood's a bit of a frost pocket, so you got to be a little bit worried about frying your fruit in the spring.
You're right. Mm.
So you have this kind of compact growing season in between. And you know, anyway, it's very interesting. It's like a puzzle.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I can see why that just hooked you from, you know, maybe I want to do this for my life. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with Eric and talk more about
the puzzle.
All this fascinating stuff. The puzzle. We'll be back with the puzzle. Back on the good stuff with Eric Bradley, winemaker for Reprix Wines, Pangloss Cellars, and Texture Wines. And when we left before the break, we were talking about this puzzle, sort of this, you know, your parents buy this vineyard, which has a bonded winery. Incredibly, I mean, it's all really fortuitous given that you ended up wanting to do this for the rest of your career. So tell us about that, you know, the Pinot, Chardonnay.
You start making wine.
500
case bonded winery on the family property.
Yeah. That's
for my parents' Christmas card list, effectively.
Oh, great. I love it.
Early on. And the wines were way better than I think anyone expected them to be.
Because you were making Pinot for still wine. You were not crushing it for sparkling.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Martin had kind of given me, you know, the basics, effectively. And then I built on them with, you know, what I learned at Davis and then certainly what I was learning while I was at Arrowwood.
Right.
But I think what was really a turning point that was embedded in all of that and in my experience at Arrowwood was that Mike Bertu had his own label called Bertu, his last name, and was off of Craig and Carragher in Sonoma, his family property. He had a little bit of Merlot over there. And he had a barn that he had been making wine in since he was a teenager with his dad. Just had been home wine for years and years. But as his star was ascending, and he had been the winemaker at Arrowwood for about 14 years at this point, he decided to bond it and was making small amounts. And Parker took notice and, you know, gave him some nice recognition. And I was kind of a perfect candidate for slave labor to go over there and help with small production winemaking. So it was all like these redwood open top, you know, vats that could fit, you know, a ton or 2 tons, depending on which tank you were in, punched down by hand, basket press.
Yep.
You know, all the crushing was, you know, very kind of meticulous and labor intensive. So we'd work all day at Arrowwood, and then we'd roll over to Mike's place and work in the evenings. His mom would cook us food. His dad would get belligerent and kind of make fun of us, which is how his dad was, rest his soul.
Were you at least drinking good wine while you were doing this?
Always,
okay.
Yes, and just trying to not make mistakes.
Yeah.
But all of that ended up being perfect preparation for being able to make Pinot because all those winemaking techniques are really traditional Burgundian kind of, you know, that's the Burgundian influence and all small batch winemaking on the red wine side tends to borrow from Burgundy.
Yeah.
So, in addition to what I was learning all day, you know, I got this kind of crash course in how to do things on a small scale that has stuck with me all these years. And Mike was really brilliant at doing it and efficient and very mechanical. And, you know, the lessons that I learned there just repeat in my head constantly. So then while I was at Arrowwood, you know, one of the responsibilities that fell into my lap was that I was in charge of keeping track of all of our vineyards. So, and we were sourcing fruit from, you know, I can't remember, 30-something vineyards all across the county, but completely focused on Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. But Knights Valley, Alexander Valley, a bunch of stuff in Russian River and Dry Creek, and, of course, Sonoma Valley and, you know, what's now Moon Mountain District and Sonoma Mountain. So it was really just an incredible place.
What a great
cut your
way
teeth.
To learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Richard was, you know, kind of an encyclopedia of winemaking and chemistry. Mm. And I found him to have a photographic palette, one I've never really run into since. So it was special. And led to some great opportunities after being there for a few years. The vineyard that was the backbone of Arrowwood's Cab Reserve program was up on Cavedale Road. It's now in the kind of the heart of Moon Mountain District. It's called the Mountain Terraces Vineyard. Mm-hmm. And the owners at the time, the Schaefer family, no relation to Doug and John over in Napa, had planted an 80-acre vineyard on this really severe hillside back when you could do that. Top of the vineyard is about 1,800 feet, bottom 600, all southwestern facing. Mondavi was super excited about the fruit source. You know, they were looking at places like this and go, oh my gosh, if this was in Napa, we'd have to pay an arm and a leg for the fruit. And in Sonoma, there was this built-in discount, effectively. At least that's how it kind of registered for them. So they gave Richard a bunch of budget to go buy all this fruit. I got to know them. And they wanted to start their own label and kind of recruited me after 3 years to go help them do that. And I had Arrowwood's blessing to go do it. Mm. So they built a winery for me on site. And I left in 2003 and kind of never looked back.
Is this where Rapree is based now?
It's right next door.
Okay.
So where Rapree is at the end of Moon Mountain Road,
okay,
which is just one road to the south of Cavedale that goes up onto the same hill. So when I drive into Rapree every day, I'm staring at mountain terraces.
That's what I thought. Okay.
So, and I remember you and I think you came up and
I did, not long ago.
Did a
maybe
piece.
Last harvest. Maybe.
Well, you came up to mountain terraces, I think, too.
Oh, yeah, I did.
Way back when.
She's been everywhere, Cole.
I've been a lot of places. It's true. But yeah.
But this is the former Carmenet property.
Exactly.
It's where Rapree is now, which is a magical place. It has similar topography, same aspect. You know, everything up there in the whole AVA is volcanic in origin in terms of the soils. And just about everything has a southwestern or western tilt to it. Mm. So thick-skinned red varieties really thrive. You know, the stuff that grows up above 1,500 feet has a very different character from the stuff that grows between, 400 and 1,500. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to blend the two together and keep them separate. It's just, anyway, it's fascinating to me. And I've been up there now for 25, 26 vintages across projects, just kind of trying to figure out how to solve that puzzle. I mean, it's just puzzles on puzzles on puzzles.
I mean, I've certainly never met anybody who knows Moon Mountain as well as you do and has made as many wines. I mean, it's interesting that you talk about your love early on for Pinot because Moon Mountain is Rhone, Bordeaux, it's a lot of Cabernet, it's a lot of Syrah. We've talked about that a lot, just like its propensity for growing these great red wines. Was that something that you struggled with, like that you were going that direction rather than a Pinot direction?
I just basically decided early on that I wanted to do as much as the world would let me.
I love that.
That is a great philosophy.
So I was making Pinot on the side. Mm-hmm. Sojourn was always my kind of side hustle. Mm-hmm. So we made the first few vintages of Sojourn up at Adelsa, up at Mountain Terraces Vineyard. Mm-hmm. So in that, in 2007, we moved a portion of the production down to its own kind of custom crush facility, Vinify Wine mm-hmm. Services in Santa Rosa, which is where Sojourn still is. And we're just running out of space as Adelsa was starting to blow up. So we had to make some choices. And it was fairly impractical to try and bring a bunch of Pinot all the way up Cavedale Road, 3 miles up a single lane country road that felt like there was going to be some sort of drama that was bound to
yes,
happen.
For sure.
Just, you know, it's just math.
Why invite that if you don't have to?
No.
Right. We got away with it for a few years and then, you know, found something that was safer. So I had these, you know, kind of parallel things going on, and it was great because nobody could box me in.
No, absolutely not. Well, we are going to take another quick break and come back and finish our time with Eric Bradley. We're back on with Eric Bradley, winemaker for Rapree Wines, Pangloss Cellars, and Texture Wines. And you mentioned not being boxed in, which is an amazing thing for, I think, a winemaker. I imagine if you want to remain creative and be able to explore all these different AVAs. So, but maybe give us a quick snapshot of what are the differences between Rapree, Pangloss, and Texture.
Sure. I think zooming out, you know, Rapree is really the mothership of, you know, those three brands. They're all owned by the same entity. I make all the wines side by side up at Rapree, in Moon Mountain Vineyard, which is what we call the property up there. Mm-hmm. And Rapree is focused exclusively on that vineyard and on, you know, wines that we can make from fruit that's grown there. So kind of almost a Pinot Noir approach, right? Where we're trying to express really unique terroir. We do it through, you know, all the Bordeaux varieties. I think Cab Franc is really the most exciting Bordeaux variety that we have up there, but everything thrives. And then on the Rhone side, Syrah is really fun up there too. Mm-hmm. Although Grenache and Mourvèd do great. We do nice whites. It's a very forgiving spot for stuff that likes the exposure that we have and the soils we have. Pangloss is really, you know, a celebration of Sonoma. And I think Sonoma Valley specifically, but also, you know, other AVAs within Sonoma County, where we're trying to source fruit from vineyards that have pedigree and history. So like the Berisha Vineyard in Sonoma Valley, that's, you know, we've got some Zinfandel that we source there that Phil Couturi grows, that was planted in 1892.
Yeah, that's so cool.
That's a really cool site.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right next to Saras Ranch, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And right in between that and Bedrock.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then,
great lineup.
You know, Rossi Ranch, again, in Kenwood, kind of behind my parents' place, which we call Two Creeks Farm. Some of the Pangloss wines come off of my family's property, which is not Pinot and Chard anymore. It's really Chenin Blanc and Albarino and some White Rhones.
Okay.
Which we replanted, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago. And then Monterosso, of course.
Yeah.
You know, doing Sangiovese, and we've done Cabs and Zins off of there in the past as well.
Another Moon Mountain gem.
Yeah. Really kind of ground zero, I think, for viticulture in Sonoma, period, especially that part of Sonoma. And then Texture's kind of just me scratching my Pinot itch, I think, on some level. It's me sourcing fruit. I wanted to stay away from Sojourn's turf. Sojourn early on had sourced some fruit from Anderson Valley, some Pinot fruit from the DeMuth Vineyard, which is now owned by Costa Brown. That was about 1,600 feet above Boonville, right next to Deer Meadows and Richard Savoy's old place that Ted Lemon now owns. But Craig and I got out of there after the 08 vintage and the fires that were mm-hmm. up in Anderson Valley, that vintage that kind of ruined mm-hmm. all that wine. And, you know, we decided, especially since it was, you know, my second job effectively, that I didn't have the bandwidth at the time or enough help to really, you know, do that well. Mm-hmm. So we focused on Sonoma after 2008.
Okay.
But I always had a fascination with AV. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make wines from up there. So in 2012, we started sourcing, you know, from a few vineyards, Farrington, the Charles Vineyard, Deer Meadows, mm-hmm. and then added Wendling and a couple others later on. And that's really where Texture was born. Then we added Sonoma County Chardonnay after that mm-hmm. from my good friend Ulysses Valdez. Mm-hmm. So all that just kind of ended up being a way for us to sell and offer really great terroir-specific Pinot and Chardonnay to, you know, people who loved Rapri and Pangloss.
Mm-hmm. Well, we only have a couple minutes left with you. I want to know kind of your take on Moon Mountain. It's got a lot of momentum. People are really starting to discover it. What do you think? What do you see coming?
I think the future, you know, feels really, really bright. All of a sudden, we're getting attention from kind of the big national critics. Antonio Galani has been mapping up there going back to like 2016 with Alessandro Massignetti. Right. And as part of that, he's really gotten to know us and is hosted a direct-to-consumer event that we've had over at Monterosa the last 2 years mm-hmm. called Reach for the Moon that we do in June, where all the producers get together and kind of show their latest and greatest. And Antonio kind of moderates.
I love it.
So it's been fun.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us today. Great to hear your story, and we look forward to tasting many of your wines in the near future.
And seeing what else you add to your puzzle.
Thank you. Yes, always more. Thank you guys for having me. Appreciate
Absolutely. We are back on with Eric Bradley for a bonus segment.
Surprise.
I wish we had the bubble bell.
I know. That's the first time you've ever said that, by the way.
Well, I am sleepy, so my brain's not working completely at 100%. So, yes, I do wish we had. Anyway, we're here because, like I said earlier, Eric is such a font of great information and experience up at Moon Mountain. We thought maybe we'd do a little bit of a Moon Mountain 101 with you.
Great.
Ask some questions. So
yeah, I mean, it's one of our newer AVAs in Sonoma County. So we'd love just, I mean, what is the history? How did that come about in your kind of world? What defines the Moon Mountain District and makes it such a special place? And we want all the goods, all the info.
It's pretty easy to understand, I think, especially for those of us who are immersed in it. But the AVA was established in 2013. Wine has been, you know, made up from grapes that have been grown in that area going back to the, you know, Goldstein Ranch days mm-hmm. when Monterosa was mm-hmm. referred to as that, which I think 1880s is what's accepted as the original plantings back then.
Wow.
Martini bought it in 1938 from the Goldsteins and then changed the name to Monterosa. But it was embedded within the Sonoma Valley AVA for, you know, a long, long yeah. time. I always felt, I know I wasn't alone, like that was a bit of a confusing situation right. for consumers because we were making these, you know, wines from really severe hillsides that, you know, behave very differently as vineyards than what you find on the valley yeah. floor. So to have valley in the AVA.
Defining mm-hmm. on every label.
Really
yeah.
was kind yeah. of confusing
kind of
to people.
Yeah.
yeah. So going back to my early days at Adelsa, we were trying to figure out how to get all the neighbors to, you know, agree to pursue getting our own AVA. Randall Watkins, who was at you know, Moon Mountain Vineyard at the time, which is what it was, where Rapri is now, was called that in between Carmenet and Rapri when Diageo owned it. And he was trying to organize everyone, but...
So that's fun. I know how fun it is to organize farmers
yeah,
and
yes, you
winemakers.
Do.
So, you yeah. know...
especially ones that love remote locations
yeah.
for a reason.
Totally.
And you had some big guys that were embedded. You know, Gallo had bought Martini, so they owned Monterosso. Diageo was their next door neighbor.
They all come with strong opinions.
Yep.
Right. And they don't necessarily want to help each other all the time. You know, some of the time.
Yeah.
But not all the time. So in this case, there was effectively not any traction because we were waiting for some of these properties to change hands. So when Jim Mumtazi, who I work for, who owns Rapree and Penglass and Texture, bought the Moon Mountain Vineyard from Diageo in 2011, the opportunity unlocked to really chase it because now you only had one big guy. Mm-hmm. And luckily, he was friends and had Gallo ties just from – he was the Stanford guy and some of the Gallos had gone to Stanford with him. So anyway, we got Gallo support. We filed an initiative or an application. It was approved. The boundaries are effectively tracing the soil. So it's 100% volcanic soil. So how we decided to define the AVA. So the northern end is in Kenwood, kind of borders Sugarloaf. And then the southern end is, you know, as the Mayacamas and you know, our side of Mount Veeder, you know, just dips into Carneros.
Right.
And gets too low and the soils change. So in some areas, like Kenwood, the floor of the AVA is 400 feet elevation. In some other areas, it's 600. It just traces the soil. And then at the top, it's the county line. So it's really exciting because you've got so many different kind of expressions of this late afternoon exposure. We get all these cooling influences, in particular from the Petaluma Gap and the Santa Rosa Plain, but also San Pablo Bay, that make it a very different set of growing conditions than Oakville and Howell Mountain and Rutherford and other parts of Napa Valley, even though we're growing a lot of the same varieties. So there's a freshness in the wines that I think is constantly being communicated across projects, across vineyards, that's a defining characteristic of the wines that get made by all the producers, really. And Cayman's getting a lot of attention.
Yes.
And Robert got on the cover of Wine Spectator a couple of years ago, and James Molesworth's behind it, and again, Antonio's behind it. So it really feels like there's inertia that's in our favor. And, you know, we make wines that age well, too. So I tend to ferment low and slow, like Pinot, instead of hot and fast, like a lot of Napa Cab has been fermented over the last 15, 20 years. And you know, that's a good fit for making wines that evolve kind of slowly in the bottle.
So. And why do you call it a district?
Well, so...
I like it.
We had some choices.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, we weren't going to use Valley, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So and there is a Moon Mountain in Virginia, I believe. Yeah. So the TTB basically told us that Moon Mountain wasn't available.
Nope. Got it.
But if we added a term to it that made our situation kind of distinctive, then it worked. So,
yeah, I like it too, Moon Mountain District.
I've always just found it fascinating because to your point about the freshness, I mean, at that southern end is Hanzel.
Right.
And so, you know, here's a very historic producer of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay for decades and decades, and they are within Moon Mountain, which surprised me the first time that I realized that.
Yep.
And then you go up to where you are and Monterosso, and you're, you know, these big, burly, old vines. And then, you know, Steve Kistler started with Chardonnay up on Moon Mountain as well. It was one of his original vineyards.
Yeah,
so
it's still there.
Yeah, it's a fascinating mix of things that you can grow successfully because of that cooling influence.
And the soils. Yeah. The soils, to me, are... you know, embedded in its distinctiveness. Yeah. You can have pockets of, you know, red volcanics and white, and those behave very differently. But combinations, really alluring.
Yeah. It's really, it is difficult for people to get a feel for it, though. I mean, it's, I'm happy these events are happening every year now because it does give people a glimpse into where is Moon Mountain? What is it like? What is the soil like? What's the heat feel like? And because otherwise, I mean, really, Hanzel, you can visit Rapree, yes?
Yep, by appointment.
Okay. So we'll give the website later on that. But otherwise, it is really hard to penetrate because it's mostly vineyards.
Right.
Right. Cayman, you know, has a tasting room down in town in Sonoma, and they'll, you know, take you up to the vineyard if you give them enough notice by appointment.
That's good to know.
Be Wise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, has stuff by appointment as well, but nothing is open to the public up there. Everything is by appointment, as it should be, just out of respect for the neighbors and, you know, how kind of narrow some of those roads can be. Silver Cloud, you know, that's owned by Stonehenge Farm. It's a really cool project up at the top of Cavedale.
Yeah, that is cool. I've been up there too.
So
just talk as you, since we're in the bonus couple minutes, just refresh everyone on the June event, because that sounds like something you want to plan ahead for that you can actually, as a consumer, experience.
So we call it Reach for the Moon. And as I said earlier, we're doing it at Monte Rosso itself. Mm-hmm. So Gallo has been very generous to host for us. You know, in the historic center of the AVA.
Right.
So it just feels great to be there. We've done it the first weekend in June the last 2 years. I think we're going to push that back a couple of weeks, and do it Father's Day weekend in 2025.
Okay.
So mark your calendars.
There you go. You heard it here first.
But there's, I think we had over 20 different wineries who poured last year.
That's
great. You know, oftentimes it's the principals and winemakers who are behind. It's such a small, kind of compact group of us that, you know, the sense of community is really, really strong. And it's an interesting AVA and just how it fits into the bigger picture with Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a story to tell, and Sonoma Valley, for that matter, because we're still a sub-AVA of them.
Right.
And Sonoma Valley's now got, you know, a handful of different sub-AVAs. So it's, I think, great for consumers that this continues to get a little more specialized.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can come visit these different specific spots and understand the concept of terroir, which is really what drives, I think, most of my winemaking decisions. It's just trying to figure out how to express where these grapes are coming from. It's the most special part about growing grapes in special places, trying to figure out how to communicate where it's all happening.
Yeah. And I would recommend that Galone map that you mentioned earlier. I mean, that is, if you really want to see the contours of the Moon Mountain District and who is where and which vineyards exist. And it's a really cool map. Is that something people can find on the moonmountaindistrict.org website?
Yeah, we can direct you.
Okay.
But Venice is who will sell the maps, but there's a link on there.
Yeah.
Come see us and we'll point you in the right direction.
Great resource. All right. Well, thank you again for this explanation on Moon Mountain District and, get your tickets soon for next June's event.
Yeah, and check out moonmountaindistrict.org if you want to learn more about the AVA.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for staying around.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Carissa, another great episode with a fascinating guy.
Yeah.
Farmer, winemaker, philosopher, high school coach.
Tennis player.
Yeah.
All the above.
Fascinating.
And it was so great. We actually, we did record a little bonus section with Eric. So go to ksro.com or sonomawinegrape.org to check that out. And it's all about the Moon Mountain District. He's such a, I mean, founder, expert on that AVA. So we wanted to give it a little extra time.
Yeah, he's a great person to spend time with, especially up there, get the lay of the land, knows a lot.
Yeah, and definitely check out, I should just, you know, the three wineries he's connected to, texturewines.com. You can go to panglosscellars.com and reprewines.com if you're interested in making an appointment to visit or trying any of those wines.
Well, I am interested in trying some of those wines.
Amen, sister. As am I.
I've always been a big fan of all of Eric's wines,
yes.
But I mean, come on. We're talking Syrah. We're talking Repris. We're talking Moon Mountain Vineyard.
I know, and you know I love Syrah.
And we're talking Syrah.
So I'm coming over.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing the reprise Syrah. I'm actually, because he brought it, and in true support of our show, Drink the Good Stuff, as fast as possible, I'm going to take one of the wines he brought us and just take it right on home and open it on Tuesday night. So I am going to do the 2018 Moon Mountain Vineyard Cabernet Sauvignon from Capri.
Well, and I think it's to his point earlier about aging, like it's good to let these wines have a little bit of time before you.
So you're saying not
dive
Tuesday?
In. No, no. I'm saying it's good. It's a 2018.
It's an 18. Got it. Got
no,
it.
No, otherwise, don't wait.
Yeah, no, never wait to drink the good stuff, right?
No,
isn't
exactly.
That the whole theme?
That's why we're here.
That's why we're here.
All right.
For sure. Well, great guest, great wines, Moon Mountain District. Definitely check them out as well, moonmountaindistrict.org, if you want to learn more about the AVA, and definitely check out our bonus segment on the AVA with Eric Bradley.
Okay, and from Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.